You're tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema right here on Thunder Radio, your hometown station. On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we power up the screams and look for Christian themes in Disney Pixar's Monsters Incorporated. Why does Mike think Boo is unclean? How does Sully recognize the truth? All that and more in 3, 2, 1... Hey, come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 160. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, the plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You're tuned into Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Brendan, my friend, welcome back to the studio.
Hey, it's glad to be back, man.
After much time, much time has passed. Many things have transpired. Brendan, we on Thunder Radio now have a audience that has just doubled in size.
Oh,
did
wow.
you know that?
I did not know that.
We have a brand new FM transmitter down there in Tullahoma, Tennessee. That is 107.1 FM, and it reaches all the way down to Lynchburg and a wide swath there. So 107.9 FM in Manchester, 107.1 FM in Tullahoma, 1320 on your AM dial, and of course the free Thunder Radio app. So new listeners out there, welcome to Finding Christ in Cinema. This is the show where, well, we already explained that in the intro, didn't we?
Yeah.
We watch your favorite movies and pull out Christian themes, because we find that that stories, namely movies, are a fantastic bridge, a vehicle that allows you to easily and simply discuss the gospel with your friends and loved ones. Everybody likes movies, right, Brendan?
I hope so.
Yeah. Hey, it's been so many weeks now and so much has transpired since then.
Yeah.
Let's do a special podcast-only segment today with some listener feedback and get our podcast listeners caught up on what's been going on the last month or so.
That works for me.
All right, so stay tuned for that, podcast listeners. What did we talk about the last time?
Finding Nemo, yeah.
We found him.
Disney Pixar's.
You know what?
Finding Nemo.
That was a great movie.
It was.
A great story.
Mm-hmm.
And those two are the subplot. We really focused on the subplot of that film, didn't we?
Yeah.
And how that bolstered the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
Really colored it, filled in all the lines and all the different shades. And we can't remember if there's anything that we needed to add to that. Addendums, afterthoughts.
No, I think we're good.
I think it stood pretty well on its own. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, today we are continuing our little foray into Disney Pixar with Monsters, Inc.
Oh, one of my very favorite films.
Yes.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
What genre would you call that, Michael?
It's kind of jazzy.
Jazzy.
It has a little bit of that musette feel to mm-hmm. it.
That French musette.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I love it. That's one of the reasons why I love this movie so much.
What else have we watched with that style in it?
Oh, good.
We've had the same conversation.
Well, many Pixar films have that feel to it in the music. If we get around to doing Ratatouille. Oh,
we need to do Ratatouille.
Oh, yes. Big time musette in there. It had to be another Pixar film.
Was it Up?
It could have been Toy Story.
Maybe. I don't know.
We have covered several Pixar films on Finding Christ in Cinema, and you can go back in the archives, listeners, on the website at christincinema.com. Just click on the tab that says The List, or it may even say The List!
I thought the patron Satan Philip presented.
Goofed that up. It has been too long. And we are hoping to cover at least a couple more Pixar films here in the very near future. But regardless, are you ready to go to the theater?
I am.
Here we go.
All right, let's get a move on, people. We are on in 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. people. Eastern Seaboard coming online.
On November 2nd, the creators of Toy Story.
Good morning, fellas.
Hey, what's shaking, bacon?
Did you lose weight or a limb?
Take you into the world behind your closet door.
Roz, you're looking fabulous today. Is that a new haircut? New makeup. You've had a lift. You've had a tuck. You've had something.
We've always been afraid monsters were there.
Scary feet, scary feet, scary feet. Oh, the kid's awake!
Waiting to scare us.
Twins and a bunk bed.
But what we didn't know is that we scare them.
What happened?
The kid almost touched me.
You can't touch a child. They're toxic. If a kid ever got through one of our doors, the results would be catastrophic.
Tuck it.
Walt Disney Pictures presents...
is a killing machine.
A Pixar Animation Studios film.
There's a kid here, a human kid.
We can neither confirm nor deny the presence of a human child.
Let's keep it. I always wanted a pet that could kill me. What are you doing?
Monsters Incorporated.
It's a musical. Put that thing back where it came from, or so help me. So help me. So help me. And cut.
What is it about Pixar films? I think we say that every time we cover one. Yeah. They are just utterly fantastic.
They take us to a different world.
That you've always dreamed of.
Yeah.
And imagination is fun, and you can, you know, conjure these great pictures in your mind's eye, but to see somebody else's depiction of it come on, on the screen, and to be able to go into a closet door and come out in a whole new world.
That's a different movie.
It's Disney, though.
It is Disney. And let's be honest, Disney owns the world. So.
Yeah, I think so.
They do now.
You know, Up. Okay, that's fantastical because you get to go in this. It really has that James and the Giant Peach feel to me.
Sure.
You know,
it's almost like a magic realism.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did Inside Out,
mm-hmm.
going into the mind, the control center, the emotional center, the mm-hmm. seat of emotions
mm-hmm.
Of this little girl. How fantastic is that? Toy Story. Obviously, you are seeing all of these toys in through their eyes. What else have we covered, Pixar? Is that it? Does that catch us up?
No, there's. I know there's more that we've done.
No, I don't know.
I don't know.
I think that's a bold statement. What are your early memories of Monsters, Inc.?
Well, I remember when it came out. I was in fourth grade. I don't remember if I actually got to see it in the theater, but I remember watching it as a kid, though, you know, once it was out on home release. And I remember loving it. I remember loving Mike and Sully and the giant octopus man when I was that old, he was a giant octopus man. I didn't really understand what he was. But Mr. Waternoose, and even Randall, just being like a monster chameleon, just camouflaging and disappearing and all that.
Right.
That was very fun.
Yes.
It was very fun.
Now, came out in 2001, so I'm not sure if we took our little ones to the theater to see it or if we just waited until it was in home theater. So I don't have initial memories of where I saw it, the setting surrounding that. But I do know that the first time that I saw it, I was absolutely captivated, again, because of, well, just the premise of the film itself, the soundtrack, the feel. There's just a feel to this mm-hmm. movie that, so it's really ineffable. I can't put that into words, but I have a great love affair for this. And I remember at Disneyland in California Adventures, because there's actually two parks now at Disneyland Resorts, as it's called there in Southern California. And they created a Monsters, Inc. ride. And man, there's a lot of anticipation waiting for that to come. And it's a fantastic ride as well. I can't even rant and rave about this because it's all emotional.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, some would argue that would actually make it more truthful.
Ah, why?
Oh, I don't know. Just some scientific studies that I can't necessarily cite right now, but I've been listening to certain podcasts talk about them. But they say that emotional response lends us more open to the truth.
We have touched on that before.
We've touched on it several
times. It's kind of like a wound, in a sense.
Well, it's kind of like the heart softening.
Yes.
Being able to receive things. Exactly. Yeah. Being able to receive things more fully and better. Right. And
kind of like if you have a cut on your finger, you're going to experience lemon juice in a whole new way.
Yeah.
Right? Because there is that breaking. I think that would be an emotional response, or is a rending, right? It's kind of like, to use a biblical term, if you rend your shirt, your garment, okay, it's wounded, it's open up, and that's that same kind of thing. I think that's why Jesus used some of his parables were very wounding in effect, mm-hmm. right? Cut to the quick,
yeah.
right? Peter, his first gospel sermon, and what was the response to those people hearing that emotional story?
It's like, what can we do?
Yeah, because they were pricked in the heart, is what I believe King James says. But they were wounded,
mm-hmm.
and that's that emotional response, opening you up for greater truths. I love that you just brought that up. Why don't we go ahead, instead of just talking waxing philosophical here.
We can do that too.
We sure can, but let's jump into some shout outs.
We got to talk about this movie.
Okay, because we have FCC's very own John Goodman.
Yeah, buddy.
As Sullivan.
That's right, Big Dan.
Oh, man, his voice is magical in this film.
Oh, yeah.
But he's just got that great Big Dan team.
Oh, no.
I don't get it, Peter.
Can I just tell you that my bio for Arsenic and Old Lace was a big paragraph out of Oh Brother Where Art Thou?
Oh, goodness.
It was the Homer Stokes speech.
Oh, no.
Cronyism.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen that.
I'll try to bring you a program.
Oh, right.
But anyway, John Goodman.
Yes.
We normally, and I hate this, but we normally don't think of John Goodman as a lead character, as a lead actor.
Yeah,
we just don't. And then with this, I mean, sure, he's working with Billy Crystal, and they are kind of like a lead team.
Yes.
But I'm more inclined to put Sully as the central protagonist, just because we follow the story almost exactly through his
hero.
Perception.
He is the hero.
Exactly.
Yes. And John Goodman carried that role.
That he did.
Yes.
That
I mean,
did.
Yes, he's a big, scary monster who's as gentle as a lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay, I don't know if we have had Billy Crystal. Is he part of the menagerie?
I cannot recall. I don't think he is.
And if he is not, shame on us.
Yeah.
Because Billy Crystal as Mike Wazowski. The Wachowski.
That's
he's
different.
One of the Wachowskis.
No, he's no. not. No. No.
He is just a comic genius.
Sorry, I'm really trying not to make,
I know.
Make a joke.
I'm
okay.
sorry for bringing that up, for planting that seed. Comic genius.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
He's fantastic in this movie, and he has a great story arc, I think. Do you agree?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
And we'll be able to discuss that a little bit further as we go on to Christian themes.
And just another note on Billy Crystal as I'm perusing the IMDb list.
Uh-huh.
We have had him in here.
What?
The Princess Bride.
Oh, shame. Brendan, that was like 155 episodes ago.
What?
Wow.
Man.
FCC's very own.
Billy Crystal.
Wow.
He was Miracle Max in The Princess Bride. I knew we had him somewhere. Man, okay, but just another note for Billy Crystal.
Yes.
So listeners may not know, I'm a theater major and whatnot. Billy Crystal not only is a master actor on screen, he is a master performer on the stage. Especially if you want a fine example, his one man show called 700 Sundays.
Whoa.
It's a one man show. It's a memoir based production, based on how many Sundays he calculates that he had with his dad. Because
you have told me about that.
His dad died early on, and he calculated that he had 700 Sundays, and he goes through the emotional journey that stemmed from that loss. And it's very powerful. It's available on Amazon to stream. It's I'm probably going to get me a DVD of it just to have it, have a hard copy. But if you want to see Billy Crystal in his prime, that's not with Robert De Niro. You can watch the one-man show called 700 Sundays.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. Hey, we got 12 minutes left until the break. I think we should go ahead and jump into some Christian themes here and get things, because we have a lot to talk about. This movie is jam-packed with things.
Any more? Well, can we give a small shout-out to Steve Buscemi?
Oh, well, yes. I should have. Shame on me for not doing that.
Is he FCC for you?
I don't know. Who knows anymore?
Who's keeping up with these things? Assistant!
Hey, he did great. He did great. And there are a lot of similarities between he and Mike Wachowski.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wazowski in this story. Can we start off talking a little bit, a little discussion on character motivation?
Sure.
And maybe we can compare and contrast Mike and Sully in this, because they're on the same team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they are partners.
Oh yeah.
At Monsters Inc. They are a scare team, but they seem to be, at first they seem, well, maybe they're kind of the same person, you know, just a little bit of a personality differences. But as the story goes on, you find out that they're very, very different people. You know, in fact, let me play my first clip here, because you learn so much about Mike Wazowski.
Yeah, there you go.
At the very beginning, when the Monsters, Inc. commercial comes on and he's in it.
I can't believe it.
Oh, Mike.
I was on TV. Did you see me? I'm a natural. Hello. I know. Hey, wasn't I great? Did the whole family see it? It's your mom. What can I say? The camera loves me.
Hey, the camera loves me. I was on TV.
Yeah.
Sully isn't saying anything other than he feels bad that Mike's face was covered up. Instantly wants to comfort his friend. But his friend doesn't even care. Mike doesn't even care that his face was covered up. I'm on TV. I'm a natural. Did you see me? You could even say that he's got an eye problem.
Oh, stop it.
Right? Yeah. Maybe that's why they made him with one giant eye.
Maybe.
Talk a little bit, Brendan, about the importance of character motivation in a story.
Well, for the audience, a good motivation really helps us sympathize with the character, and it helps us stay in tune with the character. Like, how do they feel when something happens? When something good happens, when something bad happens, we can better feel what they feel if we believe that character is truly motivated to do whatever they're doing. You can take Mike, for example. His motivation is that he just wants to get his name out there. That's what it seems to be like, right?
He wants to be the best. And they want to be the best scare team. Wants the best girl. He wants the best car. He wants to eat at the best restaurants.
Exactly. And then you have Sully, who wants to accomplish the same thing that Mike does. He kind of wants to break that record, but he doesn't want to do it for his own glorification.
No, he does it for the glory of Monsters, Inc.
He wants Mr. Waternoose to be proud, because Mr. Waternoose
has invested so much time and
one might even say love in Sully.
Direction,
guidance, mentorship, and
discipleship.
Oh, you broached it. Okay. And Sully also kind of wants to help out his city at large. He doesn't just want to stop at Monsters, Inc. He wants to help out the whole city. And he realizes that those screams are important, because they are what power the city. Yeah. And he just wants to be a good person, well, a good monster, I guess, and do his part.
Yes.
And make sure that he is a successful member of society.
All right. So that is a great compare and contrast. And you did that succinctly. You did that way more succinctly than I could.
No.
We start off. So now we know I want to focus on Mike.
Okay.
A little bit. So let's go ahead and move right through this story. We know what happens. And this little girl makes her way through the door. Now she is in the monster world. Sully discovers this. Big freak out and a good like 2.5 or 3 minutes of just fantastic visuals of him trying to get away from her.
Yeah.
Right. And he's scared. He's scared of this little tiny girl. And finally, well, they get her back to their apartment. And Sully makes a discovery. Wait a second. This human, which they're the monsters, right? They are right. Dangerous. I'm starting to, well, he has an observation.
Hey, Mike, this might sound crazy, but I don't think that kid's dangerous.
Really? Well, in that case, let's keep it. I always wanted a pet that could kill me.
Now, look, what if we just put her back in the door?
What?
Mike, think about it. If we send her back, it's like it never happened. Everything goes back to normal.
Is that a joke? Tell me you're joking. Sully, I'd like to think that given the circumstances, I've been extremely forgiving up to now. But that is a horrible idea. What are we going to do? March right out into public with that thing? Then I guess we just waltz right up to the factory, right?
Yeah, just waltz right with that thing?
That thing.
What? Let's keep it. Keep it? You know, and then they get to the factory. Mike comes up with an idea to save his hide, okay?
Because Mike's going to do what Mike's going
to
do.
In order to accomplish what for him, because he's got that eye problem.
Yeah.
He's got that eye problem, and they come up with a plan. Okay, basically it comes out, you know, get her door down here, we'll get her out of here, and everything will be fine, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, Mike gets a door down there, but this is not Boo's door.
Mike, that's not her door.
What are you talking about? Of course it's her door. It's her door.
No, her door was white.
No.
And it had flowers on it.
No. It must have been dark last night, because this is its door. Hey, you hear that? Sounds like fun in there. Okay, send me a postcard, kid. That's Mike Wazowski, care of 22. Mike Wazowski, you got your life back lane.
Wazowski.
Very good. Now, bon voyage. Bye-bye. Come on. Look at the stick. See the stick? Go. Get the stick. Go fetch.
Mike, this isn't Boo's door.
Boo? What's Boo?
That's what I decided to call her. Is there a problem?
Sully, you're not supposed to name it. Once you name it, you start getting attached to it. Now put that thing back where it came from, or so help me!
Put that thing back where it came from. Boo? What's Boo? Well, that's what I decided to call her. No, you don't name it. Once you name it, you become attached to it. She's a thing! I mean, she's a dog. He's wanting to play fetch with her to get him out of his eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And this is setting up this dichotomy. She is one of them, those things. We are us, and we need to succeed because I want more TV time. I want some magazine, you know, coverage. I love my car. You know, I love the girl, all those things, right? So we can see that you just focus on pronouns. Those aren't pronouns. She's calling it it. She's calling it, her. He's calling her it.
Well, and yeah, that's a pronoun.
Okay.
I think.
Very derogatory.
I don't know.
I wonder, do we see people that are not one of us as things? Is it easier to discount people when they just become objects?
I don't know.
I think history would bear that out. Well, they get in such trouble that now they're banished, okay? And they go to John Ratzenberger, right?
Before we go there, Michael, may I interject with something? Speaking about this dichotomy, how much time do we have left? Four minutes. I think I can make this brief point real quick. Okay, so while they are trying to get Boo safely back home, they encounter a little problem with Randall.
Yes.
Randall's trying to... this subplot that actually turns out to be the main plot. But Randall, at this point, we just know that Randall has access to this secret machine. I forget what he calls it, but it's like a scream
extractor or something.
Yeah, scream extractor, yeah. And he plans to put Boo, because Boo is one of his children that he scares for screams and whatnot. He plans to put Boo in the chair for that extractor and extract her screams as much as he can. And if you say that in an adult conversation, it actually sounds very grotesque and scary. but once Mike and Sully realize what's going on, they try to save Boo themselves, and they go seeking out Mr. Waternoose. Well, this is where things get interesting. Mr. Waternoose has already asked Sully to come demonstrate to some new monsters, new to the company, that is, how to be a professional scarer in today's modern world, you know, whatever. He wants Sully to give them a demonstration. And, of course, Mr. Waternoose is badgering his monsters like they're actors. It's all about presence. It's how
it's
you...
very familiar to you.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's how you enter the door. And then this is where Sully bursts in the door.
Mr. Waternoose!
James! Perfect timing.
No, sir. You don't understand.
Now, show these monsters
how
it's done.
No, I can't. Sir, you have to listen to me.
Pay attention, everyone. You're about to see the best in the business. Reset the simulator.
But sir!
He wants to get Mr. Waternoose's attention and tell him about this thing that they found with Randall, and they need his help getting Boo back safely home because Sully trusts Mr. Waternoose. Sully doesn't know what's...
Sully's a company man.
Yeah.
And this is the boss.
That's right. Mr. Waternoose, in Sully's eyes, is the best of the best. The top of the top. The cream of the crop, which rises to the top. He tries to get Mr. Waternoose to help him out, but Mr. Waternoose is pushing for that demonstration scare.
Mr. Waternoose, there's no time for
come
this.
Come on, what are you waiting for? Roar!
But sir!
Roar!
And when that happens, what we heard in that clip was we heard that lion roar. That was Sully showing the new monsters how to scare. That was also Sully scaring Boo.
Yeah.
Something that he never had intended to do. I try not to make it rhyme, but it did.
We like to rhyme on Finding Christ in Cinema.
Sometimes. But
sometimes we rhyme.
We see in this moment that Sully has hurt Boo. And when Sully realizes that he's done that, he hurts too. There's another rhyme. I'm sorry.
You're a poet.
No, I know it. but we hear Boo get hurt, and when we come back from the break, we'll hear Sully's response to that in that moment.
Yeah.
And how he did not mean to do that.
No, and it tells a lot about his character. Mm-hmm. And we have a real dichotomy here. This motivation and compare and contrast between Mike and Sully, they are worlds apart. They are worlds apart. So listeners, who should we emulate in Monsters Incorporated? I think it's pretty obvious here, but we will discuss this further when we get back on the other side of the break here on Thunder Radio on WMSR 107.9 FM, Manchester 107.1 FM, Tullahoma, and 1320 on your AM dial. While the listeners at Thunder Radio are getting caught up on news, weather, and sports, Brendan and I are going to take this opportunity for a podcast-only feedback segment. And as we have not done in quite a while, why is it so low in volume?
It is I.
Oh, boy, that was disappointing.
That was.
Yeah.
Very anticlimactic.
Oh, you know why? I'm using a new sound cart. And I shouldn't be using this because I haven't dialed it in. Oh. I got a new sound cart, Brendan, and I'm pretty happy about that.
Oh, cool.
But
does that mean no Black Cat? Is that what the old one was?
Oh, no, that's what's on the iPad over here.
Oh, okay.
Let's just take the opportunity to have some well-mannered frivolity and a little bit of listener feedback. But I'm going to do it right here, first of all, in real time, without stopping and starting all over again, because
you're not going to take it out in post, are you?
No, I'm not going to take it out in post.
And we're going to remain authentic, Michael.
Yes, real.
real.
I regret to announce this is the end.
What?
Now, wait a minute.
That's not even the right show.
That's a different podcast. Oh, no.
All right, Patron Saint Philip is going to take us down to King Philip's Stables of Doom.
Who goes there? It is I.
Green Blau, chain on skateboard, Pete.
I hate that sound.
I had to use it again because when I used it in the regular show, it was too low.
You could have used any other clip.
Quite right. Good idea.
Yes.
Good idea. Quite right.
I know I'm right.
Yes. All right. Philip Lest. Philip left us a comment on our previous episode, Finding Nemo, which was Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 159. You can hear that on the website at christincinema.com.
He says, wow, guys, great job with Finding Nemo. Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
You really did a thorough job of mining it for Christian themes. I'm afraid I don't have much to contribute on it. It's been a long time since I've seen the whole movie.
Oh.
I do have a question, though. Do y'all each have a favorite Alfred Hitchcock film? And do you think it would work well as an episode of FCC?
Yes, times two.
I've only seen... Well, let's finish the comment first.
Oh, okay.
I had only seen Rear Window before last year and have since seen a few more. I'm enjoying filling in some cinematic blind spots with various classics this year.
Amen.
More so than I usually do.
Awesome.
Love the show, guys. Hashtag Moeilad Gimlet.
Yeah, hopefully he is...
Moeilad Gimlet.
Well, it is. Hopefully,
Moeilad Gimlet.
Hopefully he's enjoying some good musicals as well out there. Musicals. As he's hit... Well, he does... Philip doesn't... They make him vomit.
What?
You know that that patron Saint Philip doesn't like musicals.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Alfred Hitchcock is a genius. I mean to say the least, right?
Sure.
Do you have any favorites?
I'm going to think about it because I love Rear Window.
Oh, who doesn't?
The Birds.
Yeah,
the Bird,
Tippi Hedren.
The Birds was one of the movies that I actually grew up watching. Multiple times by like renting it from the movie store.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember like sometimes there would be like at least a month or so of every week going to the movie store and re-renting the same VHS copy of The Birds.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. For some reason, I was drawn to it as a kid. I haven't really sat down and watched it as an adult now. I would say maybe in my early teens is when I was doing that, and I haven't watched it since. Like, it's been on TV.
I haven't watched The Birds since I was a little kid. And I had a my mom says that when I was a real tiny guy, I had a deathly fear of birds.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
But I don't know if one followed the other or what have you. But
I don't know.
North by Northwest.
I haven't seen that
one. Goodness. Okay, I love that. First watched that in high school as part of a media class.
Oh, yeah.
And that is absolutely, well, I just, so maybe that's why I have such fond memories of that. But, you know, you're talking Cary Grant and, you know, at Mount Rushmore, you know, and it's just this very exciting thing. I would say, well, of course, there is... Psycho.
Oh yeah, right? I forgot about Psycho. Yeah,
Spellbound. There's a lot. I haven't really seen a whole lot. I'm looking on the list here because here it is, the 39 Steps. Okay, he did a version in 1935.
Yeah,
I have that on VHS somewhere.
Okay,
what were you going to say about that?
That show. And I say show. Like
what are the 39 Steps? Right
there. There was, I don't think it's running anymore. It slowed down. It stopped. But there was a show running on Off-Broadway called The 39 Steps, and it was a stage adaptation of this story. But what the play did, the play incorporates pretty much everything else Alfred Hitchcock, and it turns it into a comedy. Like, it brings in the plane chase from North by Northwest. It brings in jokes about the birds. It brings in jokes about all these Alfred Hitchcock references.
How interesting.
It was the best show I saw in New York when I went to New York.
Oh, yes. Now I recall.
With the Motlow trip.
Yes.
It was the Motlow State University, not State University, Motlow State Community College in Tullahoma. We went to New York, and it was the best show we saw, and we saw actual shows on Broadway.
Wow.
That were okay. They were good. Huh. I just personally enjoyed the kind of humor and presentation with the 39 Steps. Like, one of the jokes was, like, they're trapped in a barn, and they're trying to figure out how to escape. Like the lead actress says, how are we going to get out of here? And the main guy, he holds up a square frame behind him and he says, through the rear window.
Oh,
it was just so good. And they did a shadow puppet version of the plane chase. And they did the shadow, but and the main guy is running, and the shadow planes are coming around him, and then he starts punching the shadows.
Oh no!
It was ridiculous, but it was so clever and so good. That's not necessarily Alfred Hitchcock as much as it is Alfred Hitchcock based.
Yeah,
but
and an homage.
And yeah, exactly. It was nothing. It wasn't making fun of him. It was it was making light of it, I guess.
Just anyway, trying to have a little fun.
Exactly. You know? The 39 steps, that's what I think of whenever I think of the 39 steps.
Okay, so. Well, I think of, because I believe that is the earliest film of his that I've seen. Of course, I mean, his films go all the way back into the 20s. Oh, my goodness.
And then, of course, there's the show. Mm-hmm. Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh, yes. I love that when I was a kid. Another one of his early films that I have, I own somewhere on VHS, is The Lady Vanishes. And so, yeah, that was a fun little discussion on Alfred Hitchcock. So
did we answer Philip's question?
We answered the first part.
Do any of those movies belong on FCC?
I think anything.
I think they could.
Yeah, Alfred Hitchcock.
Even Vertigo, I mean.
Dial M for Murder. Oh, yeah. Well, Vertigo. I mean, I would love to do Rear Window because of how how famous it is.
Sure.
But I would like to go all the way back and, to the 39 steps.
If I can watch it without losing my head. There you go. I'm sure the movie is not the comedy. I need to separate the two.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's not a shadow plane chase in the original movie.
But of course now Vertigo that's where that iconic still of Jimmy Stewart is from. Terror and horror. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe we ought to put that on the
We tried to dedicate a month to Pixar. Maybe we could dedicate a month to Alfred Hitchcock.
Hey, we're just winging it. I mean, doing the best we can, right? But what was the... Oh, okay, that was the second part of his question.
On FCC, yeah.
So, there you go. And, hey, good on you for watching those classics. No other feedback. But let's get people caught up. We promised that we would do that, and we've gone 9 minutes now without well-mannered frivolity. So, Brendan, how was your play? Where have you been?
Oh, man.
It's been a month.
It's been a wild ride. It's what it's been.
Yeah.
So back in December, I said yes to directing Arsenic and Old Lace at The Fly in Shelbyville. The Fly.
That's Shelbyville for you folks that didn't
know. That live there. for you folks that live there, it's Shelbyville, but for everyone else in the world, it's Shelbyville because that's how it's technically pronounced. But I agreed to directing it because no one else was going to do it. And I thought, hey, this could be my chance to do like an actual comedy, because A Doll's House was not a comedy by any sense of the imagination. And it was very fun. It was very, extracting though. It was very tiring.
Why was it? Was it more than normal?
A lot of work goes into a comedy because
it's not for everybody.
Yeah, it's not for everybody. I think comedies take more work than dramas because comedy relies on the presentation too. It's not just what we talked about in the show proper, what we talked about with motivations and all that, but it's also about the presentation of it, and it's the timing. It takes work to get it down.
Oh yeah,
and
it's technical, highly technical.
Yes, exactly. And I feel like this production was the little production that could, because we had so many bad things happen during the process of rehearsals.
Like what?
Like actors dropping out left and right, like lead actors dropping out, but not because it wasn't because of them. It was, they had personal stuff they had to tend to that came up. Like, I don't want to give away anybody's business, but the lady that we had playing Martha at first.
Wait, the lady playing who?
Martha.
Martha.
No, stop it. Stop that. Stop it right now. Stop it. The lady playing Martha. her.
Wait, the lady playing who?
I'm trying to be serious, Michael.
Me too! Hey, comedy, it's timing! Oh, I take this seriously.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah, you take it seriously. But her mom ended up being in the hospital. So, that's not funny. Exactly.
Why are you doing
trying to tell you.
Why did you do that to me?
But we got that role replaced. But in order to get that role replaced, we had to recast somebody already in the show. So then I stepped up to be the role that was then made vacant.
Right.
And then 2 weeks out of the show, we had another member drop out because her uncle got put in the hospital.
Oh, goodness.
And she had to help her family out with that. And then, you know, luckily we have someone in the Shelbyville community who can step into a production 2 weeks before showtime.
Whoa.
Take on a whole role and learn the lines, get the character down, and actually just bring everything they have without much prompting from me from any director, because they know how to read a script and they know how to characterize all on their own, which is awesome.
Yeah.
When you've got stuff like that happening, and then building the set was a trip because we were trying to figure out how to do it without steps.
The 39 steps?
Stop it. We're not going back there. How to do it without stairs.
Oh, with stairs. Okay.
So with stairs, yeah. Because the original Broadway set, and it's like the script is written with stairs and a landing and a balcony, and the script is all written with that stuff. We had to figure out how to make it work without it.
I'm a miracle man.
It worked. But man, it was a trip getting there, and then especially getting the window seat right.
The air got to it.
No. If they left the lid open, window seat, well, the air would get to it.
Hey, no, those two characters climbing in through the window and out, and
exactly. Yeah. We had to get it right.
Jonathan, that was the brother.
Yeah, Jonathan and Dr. Einstein. Yeah, they had to use the window to carry in Mr. Spinalzo. You know.
Yes.
Whoopsie splunkers.
Man, if we had Mark Rylance in our show, that'd be so awesome.
It's just a one-man show.
Yeah.
Wow. So, but you made it through. Audiences enjoyed it.
To rave reviews.
Wow.
It was awesome. It was a very welcome production, I think, and people loved it. So
good.
I'm happy for the cast. They had fun doing it. Of course, FCC's very own John Carney.
Yes.
Got to be Teddy Roosevelt and blow his bugle and yell charge.
Chain on skateboard. Michael. Gling blow. Chain on skateboard. Pete.
Michael, you're killing me with that thing. It was so funny during our pickup rehearsal. So I don't know where you come from, Michael, but pickup rehearsals at the fly, it's basically getting all your jokes out and trying to make each other laugh.
Yes.
John got us all.
Micah, my son, gets very frustrated at pickup rehearsals.
I can imagine why.
He gets very frustrated. So we are here to prepare.
Yes. And you guys are just goofing off.
Yep.
And John, so at the end of Act One, where Dr. Einstein and Jonathan, they're sitting on the couch, and, you know, yes, doctor, this is why we're staying here. It's so peaceful. And Teddy is supposed to go blow his bugle and yell out, charge, and then dash across the stage. John, he blew his bugle the right way, and he gets halfway across stage, and then he pauses and says, line? It was so good. It was just so good.
Of course, if we do Hitchcock films, we need to invite John.
Oh, of course. Over. Of course.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was the play. And then also I was moving houses.
Yeah.
Moving a family of five to a new house. And, you know, we're getting all that settled, and a process that should have taken a month ended up being 2 months and a half.
Oh, goodness.
And well, cause dad got put back in the hospital, and you can't really, a man can't really leave his house.
You listeners, you keep Brendan's dad in your prayers.
Yeah, I do that.
Always. Please. Just always.
Yeah. But he was in the hospital for a little bit, and we were trying to move while he wasn't in the hospital. But then once he got put back into it, everything had to go on stop. And it just pushed everything back, and it got to be a little too much,
yeah.
But it all, you know, thankfully it all worked out. So Don't worry, we're settled now. He's back home. It's right now, everything's good.
So. Now, what is it that you're doing on Saturdays?
Oh, Saturdays. Saturdays, I am now the DJ at WLIJ in Shelbyville. It's the AM radio station there. I get up at 4:30 on Saturdays now.
Wow.
And I like to have some solitude before I go on the air. I'm on the air from 6 to 3.
6 to 3?
6 to 3. 6 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon.
Wow.
Yep. Playing country, classic rock, and we phone in a couple shows from the Middle Tennessee area. You know, we've got the J. Gregory Jamboree from Bell Buckle, and then we've got the old time radio show from the Barbecue Caboose in Lynchburg.
Hey, all right.
So there you go.
So your schedule is full.
Yeah, it's pretty hectic.
Yeah. And I'm doing a show on our local radio station on Saturday and Sunday mornings, Coffee County Hootenanny, and that's I get to play whatever I want to play. It's a music show,
yeah.
And but I use it as an education opportunity as well, and mm-hmm. Little tidbits and things like that. Besides, Finding Christ in Cinema airs on Sunday nights on WMSR Thunder Radio, and we just as I said at the top of the show, just doubled the listening audience. Mm-hmm. And then you said that your station is going to be making the switch or adding an FM signal.
Yes.
As well. So that doesn't travel as far as AM, but it sounds better.
It does sound better. Well, just for some reason, FM has turned out to be more popular. I mean, yeah. I don't...
Well, I mean, especially if it's in stereo. Now, of course, it depends on, you know, how many watts are being put through the antenna.
Sure,
as
sure.
How far it's going to travel. But so we're covering a pretty good, a really good area now. And so I'm just excited about all these new people that can be tuning in and listening to Finding Christ in Cinema, because I'm not going to do it with the listeners here. We've gone far too long, but I shared with you how I've had a couple opportunities here recently that the show has helped remind me of the things that we are trying to remind our listeners. These are the ways that Christians are to behave. And it actually comes down, it's really simple. You know, when you really study, what is it that that God wants from me? He wants you to love others as he loved you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And compassion and invite people into the club, right? And love on them. So anything else, Brendan?
No, I think I
got everybody caught up.
I think so.
So thank you, listeners, for bearing with us for this long delay. You know, Mike and I did a couple of episodes of Secret Fire Podcast without you.
Mm-hmm. I know. I got to catch up on that.
And he, you know, he says, "Well, that's fun, but it's better with Brendan." So, anyway, we'll be back. I don't know if we'll be back next week or whenever. We'll let you know. Thanks for tuning in. Oh, wait, you still have more show to listen to. Oh,
yeah,
okay. Well, then I think the news has been newsed. The weather has been wetter.
The sports have been sported.
Let's get back to some Christian themes in Disney Pixar's 2001 masterpiece, Monsters Incorporated. Welcome back to Finding Christ in Cinema, the show where we believe that all the best stories have elements of the greatest story. And today we are talking about the 2001 Pixar Disney or Disney Pixar. Just fantastic movie, Brandon. What is it?
Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, and we have been talking about this dichotomy, this real difference between the characters of Mike and Sully. They're on the same team. They live in the same apartment. They went to the same school together, mm-hmm. based on the prequel sequel.
The Monsters University.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've been together for a long time, but you can't talk about two more different people. It really is the odd couple, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what were you ramping us up on regarding Sully and his relationship with Mr. Waternoose and Boo?
Oh, and Boo. Well, the scene was that Mr. Waternoose had invited Sully to come demonstrate how to be a good monster, how to give a good scare
to these green peas.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Just they're going through simulations.
Green behind the ears, yes. They are. And of course, it's bad timing for Sully because he's trying to save Boo from Randall.
He's in he's in a flipsis right now.
He wants to show honor for his mentor and his discipler and his boss, but he has started to grow compassion for Boo.
Yeah.
He has given her a name. He has given her,
I don't think she's dangerous.
He's given her an identity. He has given her,
oh, he's already gone through mourning over her. He thought she was smashed in the trash and he was passing out over that.
That hurt. Yeah. Just to see him go through that.
And he's playing with her, you know, in the bathroom when he's, you know, fee-fi-fo.
Yeah.
You know, and he has he's tender. He's compassionate.
Yes.
He's tenderhearted. He, you know, chassad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
He's all those things.
All of them.
But during this demonstration, Boo gets out of Mike's hands and crawls onto the set.
And she sees something that he didn't intend her to see.
She sees Sully scare the automated kid, but because of Boo's placement in that scene, she thinks he's scaring her. And he is scaring her.
Oh.
Because he's growling, and we heard in the clip.
He's way more scary than Randall, who's her monster.
Exactly. He's got this lion roar. He's big, growling. His teeth, fangs are showing. And it scares Boo. And we hear her whimper and cry. And she crawls away to a safe little spot. And she keeps trying to get further and further away from Sully, who loves her.
And is trying to get closer and closer to console.
And then, well, let's just listen to this next clip.
Boo? No. It's okay. I was just... No. Don't be scared. That wasn't real. It's just a... I was just...
And what we can't necessarily hear in that clip is that after he says, it wasn't real, I was just... He looks up from Boo and he sees the video monitors that recorded his performance, and
he's a good performer.
He sees himself as the problem. Like he sees himself as a true monster that is terrifying this little girl.
Yeah.
He sees that. And that is okay. Gather around, children.
Oh,
that is what
Uncle Brendan is going to learn you something. How come we don't have some kind of a special?
We need soundbite
for that. Oh, I have one. Oh, wait.
Bling, blow, ooh, chain on skateboard.
Oh, man. I wanted to forget that so much. Dang. Oh, bling, blow, oon, chaino, skateboard, Pete.
Something like that.
Gather around, children.
Yeah.
this is what Aristotle calls recognition.
Whoa.
This is where this is where I call Sully the protagonist, the central protagonist, because he is the one that undergoes this recognition. Mike, I didn't really get that feel for Mike, but Sully realizes, he recognizes, literally, that he himself is the problem. It's something that goes all the way back to Oedipus. Oedipus is trying to figure out why the city of Thebes is undergoing this plague. He is trying to solve the murder of the king. And then when he realizes, oh, it's my fault. It's that drastic turn of events where the protagonist realizes that he is the problem and he needs to change in order to do the greater good. That is what pricks Sully's heart.
Yeah.
And he realizes this. And of course, all the due shame and the due guilt that happen in such things, they happen. And we see Sully's character. It's almost like we see the chaff just fall away. The chaff,
yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We see that. We see the chaff just blow away, and we see this new creature.
And he doubles his resolve to get her home.
Yes. Yes. So now we can pick it back up where they are banished.
Yes.
Because as it turns out, Mr. Waternoose was in on Randall's plan too. In fact, he was probably the organizer and orchestrator of it. Randall is just a lackey, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Mr. Waternoose banishes Mike and Sully out to the Himalayas.
with John Ratzenberger.
Where else is John Ratzenberger going to be? Hey, come on
He's
in.
He's got to be in a Pixar movie somewhere.
Hey, Norm.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and continue with your thoughts, because then I'll be able to jump in at the end.
Okay. Well, it's through this recognition process, though, that Sully recognizes that what really matters to him is Boo. Mm. And that's really all that needs to be said about it, at least in his mind. He doesn't feel the need to explain it to Mike Wazowski. And that kind of hurts Mike.
Yeah.
It does hurt Mike, and it would hurt anybody.
Rightfully so.
Yeah exactly. Yep. And let's see. We fast forward just a little bit to the cave of the Yeti. Am I saying
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Abominable Snowman.
Abominable Snowman, yes. The Yeti, yeah, sure.
And yellow snow cones.
Well, I'll just go outside and make more.
Oh, don't worry. They're lemon.
Lemon. Oh, man. That's a well-placed.
Oh, yes.
A well-placed character.
Yep.
But we fast forward to that scene, and Sully finally bears it all. He says, we need to go get Boo.
We need to get to Boo.
Ever since that kid came in, you've ignored everything I've said. And now look where we are.
Oh, we were about to break the record, Sully. We would have had it made.
None of that matters now.
None of that matters now.
And he doesn't say we should go and get Boo. We have to. We must.
Mm-hmm.
We will.
Yeah. He says that none of the things that Mike is focused on, none of that matters now. Because in the process of...
Well, there's a life at stake.
Yeah. Well, in the process of recognizing his own faults and failures, he is able to more clearly see the real stakes. And like you just said, a life is at stake, because I can't think of it at this point. Have they seen what the scream extractor can do?
No, they say that when they get back.
They say when they get back, and yes, we see what happens to that one guy.
Yes.
The lackey. The technician, yeah.
Yes.
And it's rough.
Sucks the color out of them.
Yeah. And you can see it happen to a monster. You can just imagine what it does
to a little tiny girl.
Yes, exactly.
To a Boo.
None of what Mike wants matters to Sully anymore. And Mike's having a hard time dealing with it.
Sully, what about everything we ever worked for? Does that matter? Huh? What about Celia? I am never going to see her again. Doesn't that matter? And what about me? I'm your pal. I'm your best friend. Don't I matter?
Mm. See, what Sully is willing to do now, he's willing to go after his pearl of great price.
Oh, ho, ho!
Sully understanding now what's really going on.
You get a point.
Hey, thank you. Sully is going after his pearl of great price. It's Boo that he knows that everything is worth. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine pearls. And upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. This kind of reflects how Sully is feeling toward Boo. More so, could we say that this is Sully taking up his cross?
Absolutely.
Could we say that this is Sully
following after
Jesus?
Yes.
Knowing that he can only let his compassion be his guide. And
take up your cross and follow me, Sully. This is how you do it.
If it means losing a job with Monsters, Inc.,
even the scare record, everything.
I think Sully even takes it more personally. I think if it means losing his life, I think he's willing to do that.
Whatever he has to do.
Exactly. For Boo.
Yes.
He will do it for Boo.
Greater love. Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we even hear that in Sully's final response as he leaves the cave.
I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry we're stuck out here. I didn't mean for this to happen. But Boo's in trouble. I think there might be a way to save her.
Ah.
Yep.
That's a one-track mind. He's not going to be deterred.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to be derailed.
Yeah.
Not going to be sidetracked. Not going to be led down the primrose path. Not going to be hoodwinked. Now I'm getting, I'm starting to pull things from Polar Express. Oh, man. Brendan.
So that's all I had.
Fantastic. So this compare and contrast between these two characters. That's what this show, this episode has been about. Mm-hmm. Now, in the same cave, in the same scene, you know, the abominable Yeti.
Anemone.
He says that he's telling these guys, oh, you know what? Being banished isn't all that bad. Yeah, it had a terrible effect on Bigfoot or Sasquatch or what have you, but you guys are going to do just fine.
It won't be so hard for you guys, though. You know, I mean, how lucky can you get? Banished with your best friend.
He is not my friend.
Oh, I just assumed you were buddies, you know, when I saw you out there in the snow hugging and all that.
Look at that big jerk. Ruined my life. And for what? A stupid kid! Because of you, I am now stuck in this frozen wasteland!
Okay, now he has switched from referring to Boo as a thing or it, and now she's a stupid kid.
Mm-hmm.
Wow! Mm-hmm. And because of her and him, I'm stuck in this frozen wasteland. Right. He is. He's on the wrong track. You know what? Other people have been on the wrong track. It's a great thing when you read through the Bible because you know what you discover? Boy, all these other people, except for Jesus, all these other people, boy, I can relate to them. Look at how they're behaving. Look at this guy's being a creep. He's doing, or as my 5-year-old daughter, as we're reading through her little children's Bibles right now. And by the way, oh, my goodness. OM goodness. The children's version of the story was it Randy Frazee and Max Lucado. You know the story?
Oh, okay. Yes.
Well,
yes.
Max Lucado took the reins on this children's version. Whoa. Tears. I just cry reading these things. But anyway, we've moved on to the action Bible now, which is kind of like a big honking comic book style thing.
A big graphic novel.
Yes. And it's wonderful to be able to point out when my daughter says, you know, about like we're reading about Jacob and she can say, Jacob was naughty. Yes, he was naughty. He did very naughty things. Everybody does naughty things. Mm-hmm. Or when we get to David and Bathsheba. David did naughty things. Yes, he did very naughty things, and God called him a man after his own heart. So, you know, it's great to, I'm not beating on Mike Wachowski. I understand Mike Wachowski and his siblings. Anyhow, so let's get back to this. He is on the wrong track all the way, but we have a change of heart that does take place here. There is a change of heart, but it reminds me of Peter. Peter in Acts chapter 10, when he is on that rooftop, right? And he's so hungry and waiting for food, and he just falls into a trance. On the next day, this is out of the NASB, on the next day, as they were on their way and approaching the city, Peter went up on the housetop about the 6th hour to pray, but he became hungry and was desiring to eat, but while they were making preparations, he fell into a trance, and he saw the sky opened up and an object like a great sheet coming down, lowered by 4 corners to the ground, and there were in it all kinds of 4-footed animals and crawling creatures of the earth and birds of the air. A voice came to him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "By no means, Lord. For I have never eaten anything unholy and unclean." Again, a voice came to him the second time. "What God has cleansed, no longer consider unholy." This happened 3 times, and immediately the object was taken up into the sky. Jump down to verses 19 through 20. While Peter was reflecting on the vision, the Spirit said to him, "Behold, 3 men are looking for you, but get up. Go downstairs and accompany them without misgivings, for I have sent them myself." Jumping down to verse 25, when Peter entered the house of Cornelius, Cornelius met him and fell at his feet and worshiped him. But Peter raised him up, saying, "Stand up, I too am just a man." As he talked with him, he entered and found many people assembled, And he said to them, you yourselves know how unlawful it is for a man who is a Jew to associate with a foreigner or to visit him. And yet God has shown me that I should not call any man unholy or unclean. Or I should not call any child from the human world a thing or it or treat them like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
God is teaching Peter a great message. We're all familiar with this. The message is those Gentiles who are considered to be beasts of the field, mm-hmm. crawling creepy things of the ground, birds of the air, fish of the sea, and those things that has been in the law all this time, don't eat these things. That is pointing to a bigger picture. Don't be these things. You are what you eat, right? Mm-hmm. But now the time has come in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 13 through 14 out of the New Living Translation. But now you have been united with Christ Jesus. Once you were far away from God, once you were beasts of the field, the cattle, you were creeping, crawling things in the dust of the earth, which signifies death, a state of deathness, right? Which is not a word, I understand that. But now you have been brought near to him through the blood of Christ. For Christ himself has brought peace to us, you and me and you, both of us together, right? That's one of the songs in here that Mike sang, but he didn't get the message out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's this dividing wall has been torn down, and now there's a human child in the monster world. And continuing on in this passage, he united Jews and Gentiles. He united monsters and humans. He, into one people, when in his own body on the cross, he broke down the wall of hostility that separated us. I want to get out the key verse right now because, and we still have a few minutes to talk, so we'll go through this a little bit deeper, but check this out. Does this not fit? John chapter 10, verse 9. Who, this one, this Messiah, this anointed one, this king that came to break down the wall of hostility that separated its and us, them and us, right? You're not one of us. Well, now we are. We're mm-hmm. all one together. I am the door. The door in Monsters, Inc. Come on. How perfect is this? I am the door. Jesus says, if anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. I just thought that was so apropos.
Oh, yeah.
Look, there's her door. This isn't her door. What are you talking about? It is her door. No, her door is Jesus. And she's coming in and she's going out and she's going to find pasture. And I'm going to help her find that pasture
mm-hmm.
is what Sullivan did. James P. Sullivan. And he's a picture of a Christian. That's what Christians do. That's what we are to do. That's the most important thing that we are to do. How many times, Brendan, have we discussed that concept of you're one of us?
Oh, it was the running theme of 2017.
Right. And right now, off the top of my head, because I'm excited about the trailer that I had just watched a few days ago, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what was his name?
Mike Gronkowski, I think, was his name.
Is it another Wachowski sibling?
It sounds like it.
Okay. You know, he was a muggle, a nomad. And that mm-hmm. was the point that we made in that story. But here are these three wizards saying, hey, you're one of us, right? I mean, Newt Scamander told him, because you're my friend and I like you, right? How did he get to like him? How did he get to be friends with him? How did Sully become friends with Boo? Because you spent time with her.
Yeah.
How is that? You know, and I love it, Brendan, when back in that apartment scene where he tells Mike, I don't think she's dangerous. What is it?
Jacob Kowalski.
Kowalski! Yes!
Gronkowski is a hockey player. Forgive me, guys. I'm so sorry.
But anyway. Sports stuff.
Yeah, they don't even have this a sports ball. It's like a little sports. It's like a little sports disc.
Now you made me forget my train of thought.
I'm so sorry.
What was I talking about?
Oh, yep, man. Totally. One of us.
So back in the apartment where he says to Mike, I don't think she's dangerous. You know? Oh, yeah, I always wanted to have a pet that could kill me! Right? And then he said, you know, she's sleepy now. And he takes her in. And how tender was that scene where she starts fussing and he says, oh, the closet. Oh. And holds up the picture. Oh, Randall, he's your monster. No, he's not in here. No, nobody's in here. See, there's no monsters in this closet. Here, I'll show you. And he goes in there. Well, now there is.
But, yeah.
And then he pulls up those cinder blocks in front of the door and sits on it and says, I'll sit here until you go to sleep. Man. Christ-like. That's what mm-hmm. Christians do. And Mike, with his big, giant eye problem, you know? I love that as an aside, when he's in the sushi restaurant. I'll never forget the first time I laid eye on you. He has an eye problem. And yeah. I think if the writers did not do it for that purpose... What a serendipitous blunder that was, you know? Well, I wouldn't call it a blunder, but how, you know, fortuitous for Christians such as us to be able to look at him and say, he's got an eye problem and she's not one of, you know, she's an it. And how easy is it for us to, we're all guilty of this, to marginalize people by labeling them as something because now they're not a person. They're a drug addict or they're a draft dodger or whatever, whatever it is. You put a label on somebody and it's easy to minimize them and to dehumanize them. Right. Any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off the wall remarks?
Yes. How much time do we have?
We have about 3 minutes.
Well, we got to close the show. We got to close the show. Okay. So on the way in, I was listening to another podcast, and one of the points they were talking about was how being so connected all the time, being so connected to our devices and social media and all that, that actually lessens our capacity for empathy.
Really? Did they say why?
They said it was because we are so connected all the time, we have to compartmentalize to make sense of it all. And it's when we take moments of solitude to reconnect. Well, they use Jesus as the example, of course. You know, he took solitude, he took solo moments to reconnect with God and thus soften his heart, soften his mind, making him more making him more able to empathize and sympathize with people outside of himself, people less than himself, you know. So I just that was oddly enough on the podcast I was listening to on the way here, and you talk about it here, and hey, again, how fortuitous.
Yes, because that is one of the greatest ills in our society these days, and it just pains me when I see Christians that, especially online, because apparently you can, if you go online and you say anything you want, and it doesn't count.
Really?
You can be horrid
and
just ugly
and
just dishonoring to Jesus, but it doesn't count because it's just digital bits, right? Yeah. Right? Well, don't read it if you don't like it.
Pixels
right?
on a screen.
Yes. You know. But this, you know, we got a real problem, friends, in the church, not including people. We want them to be one of us, and you do that with love and grace and mercy and long-suffering. And chassad, compassion. Brenda, what are we going to talk about next time?
Oh, next time we would have continued this Disney Pixar train,
but there was an emergency.
But friends, Star Wars is out, so we got to cover it.
The Last Jedi, very Last Jedi, right?
Who is the Last Jedi, Michael?
Maz.
Oh, okay. I wasn't expecting that answer.
Okay. I don't know. I have a weird theory about Maz. Well, okay. We can talk about that maybe when we get back together the next time. We aren't sure when that's going to be because schedules are still working out and all that good stuff. but we will let you all know. Fighting Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener-supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. Oh, to witness the firepower of this fully armed... Let me do it this way. I don't even know where it is. Yes, I do. To witness...
Witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational...
digital ministry, including all 160 episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema and the list of films we've covered. Get over to our website at christincinema.com. You can send us email to fcc@gctnetwork.com.
Or you can send us a voice line at 507-407-GCTN and maybe try the backup number at 507-407-4286. Now, let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
And when you do listen to the good old podcast, you can get extra bonus segments. You know what I mean, radio listeners?
You know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, precisely. You can search for us. That's searching for Finding Christ in Cinema at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play Music.
Yes, and for all the shows that we produce here on the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas,
The Theonauts,
and our super-duper secret Tolkien show, The Secret Fire Podcast, visit us at our main website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
No, I'm good.
All right, and that is a wrap.
Double-decker couch.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Bling, blow, ooh, chain on skateboard, Pete.